Are you a speech language pathologist or occupational therapist who is feeling the squeeze of high caseloads and limited support? Wondering if maybe private practice is the answer? Well, let's talk about it. Join me for a free training on May 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern, where we will explore what it really takes to leave the schools and start your own private practice in 2024. We're talking about the ability to have a flexible schedule, choose your own clients, create your own caseload cap, and uncap your earning potential by leaving salary ladders and scales behind so that you can finally earn what you're worth. Join me for a free training on May 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern, where we will explore what it really takes to leave the schools and start your own private practice in 2024. We're talking about the ability to have a flexible schedule, choose your own clients, create your own caseload cap, and uncap your earning potential by leaving salary ladders and scales behind so that you can finally earn what you're worth. Don't just dream about having better work-life balance. Make it your reality by starting your own private practice. To register, just head on over to privatepracticetraining.com right now and sign up, and I'll see you there. Samantha Rothman is an occupational therapist with a private practice called Play and Purpose in Phoenix, Arizona. She decided to start her private practice after being laid off during the pandemic and realizing that she didn't want to rely on others for income anymore. In this episode, she talks about creating a neurodiversity-affirming OT practice with a whole child approach. Samantha also discusses how she grew her practice to include 5 therapists, as well as the importance of setting boundaries to avoid burnout as her practice grows. If you've been thinking about starting or growing a neurodiversity-affirming practice and want to learn more, this is a must-listen episode, so stay tuned. I'm Jenna Castro-Casbon, CEO of The Independent Clinician and founder of Private Practice School. First, I started my own private practice, and then over the past 15 years, I've worked with over 10,000 SLPs and OTs to start and grow their successful private practices so they can have more freedom, flexibility, fulfillment, and finances. I created the Private Practice Success Stories podcast to share what's possible for you, your family, your clients, and your community when you choose private practice. We'll share everything from small private practice side hustles to flexible lifestyle private practices to traditional brick and mortar practices and everything in between. You'll meet regular clinicians just like you who followed our steps and are now living their private practice dreams. If they can do it, you can do it too. So let's get started. Before we dive in, can you please share your name, your location, and the name of your private practice?
Yeah, so I'm Samantha Rothman. We are based out of Phoenix, Arizona, and I own Play and Purpose. I'm also an occupational therapist.
I love it. I have to say that you're one of our we haven't had that many OTs on the show, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show. But before we get into kind of what your private practice looks like now, can you please take us back to the beginning of your private practice journey and talk about what were you doing professionally when you started thinking about private practice?
Sure. Yeah. So I have kind of an interesting story. 2020 obviously was a monumental, life-changing year for everyone. So my personal experience with that was I was working for a large hospital home health company here in Phoenix, and we all thought that we were like, what is it? They said essential workers, and we didn't have to worry about our jobs, and our jobs were safe. And so I didn't really think that I had to worry about layoffs or anything like that, because that's what we were being told from everyone. And then also my boss at the time, she kind of reassured us. She was like, we're just going to kind of weather the storm and we're not doing any layoffs. You guys don't have to worry about it. So that was comforting. And then exactly 1 week after she had that staff meeting with us, I got laid off or furloughed. So I was like blindsided, depressed, panicked, anxious, all of it. And I was like, okay. At first, I just kind of saw it as like this extended vacation. And I was like, well, that's cool. I'll just hang out by the pool. I'll take a couple weeks off. That's fine. And then we thought it was just going to be 2 weeks or whatever at the time. And so I thought I'll just hang out. And then it wasn't 2 weeks and I never got my job back. So I kind of started thinking, I guess at that point, I was like, I don't like the feeling of having to be dependent on somebody else for income. And whether that's like my boss, the government, anything, I just don't want to have to wait for a stimulus check. I didn't like the feeling of waiting for unemployment. I didn't like the fact that my boss could just make a decision like that, even though I was like the second longest OT that had worked there. And so I don't really understand like where that decision came from, but that's in the past. And I just was like, I don't like this. I don't like that somebody else can control that for me. So what can I do? And at the time, I was just kind of like researching like investing and researching entrepreneurship. And I never thought that I could actually be my own business. I was going to open something. And I was like, what do I want to do? Do I want to have an eBay store? Do I want to do this or that? And then I was like, oh, I have actually skills to offer and I have my own credentials and like I can kind of do my own thing. So at that point, it was just kind of like a thought or an idea. It wasn't anything. And then I ended up having to take another job because the unemployment stuff ended or whatever. So I ended up going back to work after 6 months. And I really just didn't like the agency that I was working for. And it was just very sketchy and just kind of like things were happening. And I was like, I don't know why I work here, because we had like a supervisor. And but every time I had a question, she was never really able to help me. And then I didn't get benefits. So I was like, I'm not really getting anything out of this. I don't think I really need the umbrella of working for an agency anymore. So at the end of 2020, I was like, I think I can maybe make this the thing. So like I do a thing like every New Year's, I try to set goals like for the year, and I don't really make it like a resolution. I don't put like numbers on it, but I just kind of think about like what I want my year to look like. And so at the beginning of 2021, I remember sitting at a league and I was like writing ideas for a name for the practice in my journal. And I had no idea. I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to do this. But like, step one, I'm just going to decide on a name. And then that was like the beginning of 2021. And now we're like at the end of 2023 and we have a team of 5 therapists and we have OT and speech. We also just accepted our first contract with the public school district here in Arizona too. So it's been a really exciting and busy and evolving 2 years, I guess I can say. A lot of growth professionally and personally.
Definitely. And oh my gosh, yeah. Like from kind of a bad situation, right? I mean, the pandemic obviously was an awful situation for all of us, right? But I remember those early days where we just thought it was going to be 2 weeks. And yeah, it was kind of fun / weird. And then, yes, it kind of kept going on. And I think there your story is so familiar of so many people who are like, I thought this was supposed to be a safe job. Right. Yeah. And sure, the pandemic was hopefully a once in a lifetime thing.
But
nonetheless, like that safety net was kind of pulled out from under so many people, and people did end up other jobs that also weren't serving them. And you weren't a new OT, right? You had been doing this for a while. So you're sort of like looking around and you're like, wait a minute, like I can do better for this. They're better than this, like for myself and for my clients. So good on you for setting that intention and going for it.
Thank you. And also, I think I kind of started evolving as a clinician too. Like I am very much of the neurodiversity affirming standpoint or method, I guess you can say. And I realized that the company that I was working for did not really embrace that. And I didn't feel like I aligned with them anymore. And so I didn't know how to treat clients in the way that I wanted to, but also the mentality of a clinic or like a law, like an agency is, well, this is give them an idea or a problem. They're seeing is, well, that's just like how we do it here. And so I never felt like, I know that's how we do it here, but it doesn't feel right. And I don't like doing this. And I don't like pushing these behavioral tactics, but I know that's the way that you guys want me to do it. And I had already been seeing my clients for so long that I also didn't know how to start treating them differently. So it was like an internal struggle as a clinician too, because doing home care, parents are always around. And I was like, I felt that shift in myself as a therapist, but the parents were also like, why is she not doing what she's been, I don't know, it's just like a weird, it was a weird thing, I think, for me too. So I was like, I want to be able to treat in the way that feels good for me and that just feels aligned with the methods and the techniques that I like to use too as a therapist. So,
yes. And I think that internal struggle that you're talking about is so familiar to so many of us, right? Where we just feel like this doesn't feel quite right. I remember that when I worked at the hospital doing worksheets with my clients with cognitive issues, dementia and stuff, it didn't feel right to me, but we had so many workbooks and people were like, use this workbook. It just, the examples were terrible and my patients weren't really, it wasn't generalizing. So I totally know what you're saying about feeling.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get out and you get do your own practice and you're like, wait a minute, I have to unlearn some things.
Yeah. Right? I did, but it was nice because I got to start fresh and like with clients that didn't know me and I could do it my own way. And that was like really empowering because I was like, I know that all these clinics down the street are all of like my competitors or whatever here in the Valley, like maybe they're a bigger company than me or maybe they accept more insurances or whatever, but like I do it differently. And like, that's kind of what makes my company stand out. And that's something that is important to me. And like, I'm very proud of that because I don't know. I feel like it's just nice to not have to work for somebody else's like vision. I can do it myself. And then the other thing was like, I ended up getting certified in DIR floor time. And that was like pivotal too. Cause I was like, okay, wait, am I going to spend $1,000 on this certification to market for somebody else? Or am I going to market for my own practice now that I have these like certifications? So just as I was evolving, I think as a therapist, it kind of just went hand in hand.
Yes. And listeners, listen to what Samantha said. If you want to take all these continuing education programs, right? You want to do IO, you want to do LSVT, you want to do
But
when you have your own business, now it's a tax deduction and you can actually use that knowledge that you have in your brain to help your own private clients, because I'm sure that y'all have had the experience of going to a convention or doing a certification program, air quotes, for your employer, and then you get back to work and you can't really do it, right? You can't see that frequency or you can't see that type of client for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And it's super frustrating.
Yeah. And also, I was thinking about this recently and I remember just taking continuing ed courses just to take them. I was like, well, I need hours. My license is due in a few months. Like, I'll just take this random class. But now being in private practice, I pick classes that I'm actually interested in and things that I want to learn about and things that will help my business, but also help me as a therapist or help me in a leadership position or something that will actually benefit me versus just taking a class to get some hours first.
Yes, totally. Because I think people do get like a little bit complacent, but not that it's their fault, right? They're just going through the motions a little bit. Yeah. That's a lot of times when people are like, you know what? I don't feel comfortable. This isn't me. I'm not the kind of person who just, and I'm not saying that you were doing this. A lot of times people have said, I felt like I was phoning it in and I felt like I was just kind of showing up.
Yeah.
And like, that didn't feel right to me. That's not who
you're
I am.
You're just like going through the motions. I felt like I was like, I talked to some of my connections here too in Phoenix and we all kind of say the same thing. Like, how can you be a good quality or how can you give like good quality therapy when you're so burnt out? You have no time to go to the bathroom. You have no breaks in between clients. My friend here, she was like, do you think that I was a good therapist when I was seeing 18 clients a day? She was like, I was just trying to make it through the day so I could go home. And I was like, I'd rather see less clients, but actually have the time to research and plan a good session, an individualized session, besides printing out 30 worksheets and doing the same thing with everybody. So yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, totally. So let's go back for a hot second and talk about what that shift from working at the agency to starting your own private practice. What was that like?
So once I made it like a priority or this thing that was going to happen, I started like doing the math, of course, and I was like, okay, how many private clients do I have to feel comfortable enough to replace my income and quit my job? And for me, that number was 10. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to slowly start backing out of my job. And so I'd started not being available on Fridays. So I would work for them Monday through Thursday, and then I would see my own clients on Fridays. And then I had enough clients to fill another day. So I stopped working Mondays, and I would see like private clients Mondays and Fridays, and I would work for them 3 days. And then before I knew it, I had enough clients to fill my week. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna leave. So I just left, and it was a very interesting conversation with my boss. And he, such a, I don't know, I should probably send him a business card or something. He was like, well, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. So when this doesn't work out and you want to come back. And I was like, okay, I think I'm doing pretty okay. But thank you for the like words of encouragement.
Wow. I'm going to totally butcher this, but something like, if anyone says no, do it twice or so. Take pictures and do it twice or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
Definitely, and send him a business card. Like,
yeah. And then he asked me like one random question about it. And I was just like, yeah, I was like, don't worry. I have a non-compete. And so I was like, I'm not planning on taking any of your clients. I'm not planning on taking any of your staff. And then he was like, okay. I was like, okay. Okay, I don't think I'm ever going to need to go back to that job, but
yeah. But also so some of those things, like sometimes bosses say those things. Sometimes I think I've heard a disproportionate number of comments like that coming from men specifically to like female therapists too. And it's just, you know what? I got this, buddy. Like, I've got a plan and I'm going to make this happen. And
yeah. And I didn't tell him, but I was like, I already have clients. Cause I wasn't telling anybody what I was doing. And I was like, I already have clients. I already have a wait list. You have no idea what you're talking about.
And that might have driven you a little bit too, right? Whether you are aware of it or not, you might have wanted to show them a little bit and whatever, you're doing your own thing. You probably haven't given them any place in your mind since before, you know, doing this interview right now. You cut down your hours, you left the job altogether. And then what happened next?
Mm-hmm. I was working, just kind of doing my old thing. And I was like super happy. It was really exciting and intoxicating, to be honest. I just was like, wow, I can't believe all these people want to work with me. And I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life. This is just crazy. And I remember thinking, when you work at the hospital or a clinic, you don't always get to pick your therapist. You just kind of get whoever's available. Or I'm working on the neuro floor today, so I'm seeing whoever's on the floor, and you don't get a choice about it. And so it was really exciting to see people were like actually choosing to work with me, and not just because, well, she's the one that has the opening at the clinic. So it got really intoxicating. It got really consuming, I will say. And I had to really work to like find a better balance, because it really just, it was very exciting. And I got really burnt out though. So I really had to scale myself back. Anyway, so I was working, it was just me, and I had no intentions of hiring. I had no intentions of ever taking insurance. I just wanted to live my life and travel and do my thing like most people. And then one of my friends here convinced me to take insurance. So I did, even though I never wanted to. And then I never wanted to hire. But I got really sad because I had to keep turning people down because I was full. And I had a wait list, and that was fine. But I was like, I just hate that. I can't help more people. I hate having to have those conversations with parents, especially in Arizona. There's such a lack of providers here. I don't know if that, I know it's like universally, but especially here, there's just so few providers. Everywhere has a wait list. And I was like, I just hate to be that another person that tells them no. And so I was like, maybe I can hire. So I hired a CODA, and then I hired another CODA, and then another CODA, and then a speech therapist. So yeah, now we're here.
So now we're here, but like in less than 2 years, or about 2 years.
Yeah. So December will be 2 years since I took my first private client.
So
just about 2 years.
So that's pretty impressive, right? To be able to and to set that intention, right? Like it all started kind of with you. Well, it started maybe with the getting laid off and furlough, all that kind of other stuff. But to really set that intention, listen, I'm going to do this. Came up with a name for your practice, started out on your own. And I really appreciate what you said too about losing track of those boundaries, right? And feeling like you're toward burnout, because that's something that we see a lot when people first start their practice because it is intoxicating. I think that's a fantastic word that you use because you're all of a sudden, oh my gosh, I get to see these clients and they love me and I love them and I'm making more money. Like it is a little bit addictive, but
I'm treating how I want to treat as a therapist. I make my own rules. This is wonderful.
Right. But then you don't have the boundaries, right? And then you find yourself working. So that is kind of like a tipping point for people where they start to realize, you know what, if I keep going, like this is just as not sustainable, honestly, as like the previous job was, right?
Hi there, Jenna Castor-Casbon here, and I hope that you're loving the episode so far. Chances are you've been listening to this podcast for a while and soaking up a ton of information from myself and our guests, and it's time to make the shift from dreaming to doing and go from inspiration to implementation. Successful private practices don't build themselves. At The Independent Clinician, we help regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners using our proven systems. No more guessing, no more Googling, no more sleepless nights stressing about legalities. We can help you just like we've helped the guests featured on this show. They didn't guess or stress their way through private practice. Instead, they got step-by-step help along the way, and we're excited to help you too. If you need help to get set up and started with private clients on the side, the Start Your Private Practice program is perfect for you. If you've already started and you want to transition into full-time private practice and be successful once you're there, the Grow Your Private Practice program is your next step. To learn more about our programs, go to independentclinician.com. Now back to the episode.
So tell people your thought process on hiring a CODA.
I had the wait list and I was like, you know what? I hate having to turn people down. I feel so bad and I want to help everyone. And so that was my first thing. And then also I was like, well, I'm leaving money on the table by not hiring. I never really thought that I would say that because money is like not really like a top value for me, but it's true. And I was like, man, every time I can't see a client because my schedule's full, like I'm just losing money. So I started to kind of learn, how do I hire? Where do I go? Who am I looking for? All of that. And then once you do it once, you do it again.
Yeah, because then your schedule fills up again, right? And then you're like, oh man, no, I need to have someone else. And you're absolutely right. That is the decision when all of a sudden your wait list is long. And it's two things, right? It's leaving money on the table. And it's also saying no to people that need services. And you feel that kind of clinician guilt on that. Mm-hmm. But it's also the ability to give other people a job to work for someone who you're fantastic, right? And so possibly those people that you've hired to work for your clinic, maybe they were miserable in their old jobs too. And now they feel like they're working for someone who is neurodiversity affirming and maybe their old practice or their old hospital or whatever was it. So you're giving back to not only like your community, but also these therapists who are working for you.
Yeah, I've actually thought about that a lot. And I've talked about this like in different networking conversations and stuff too. One of my friends always tells me, because sometimes I like don't always give myself a lot of credit. And one of my friends is like, Sam, you created income for all these people. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's true. I never really think about that. But she was like, you doubled somebody's income. You gave them a job that they love. I was like, that's true. It is really important to me. I know there's like a workplace trauma. I don't know what to call it, but it's a thing. And I know people have poor experiences from their other jobs. And I love being able to hire them and then give them the experience that they should have as a therapist and that I wish I had. Because I think if I had a job where like I felt fulfilled and I felt valued and appreciated, I don't think I ever would have started a private practice. But I was at the point where I was like, I don't like any place that I've ever worked. I've never felt valued. I've never felt appreciated. I'm never going to get promoted. So really, I was kind of pushed into private practice in a way. And so I just want people to, I don't want to carry on that trauma that I have from my job. I don't want to pass that on my staff. So I think I try really hard to, I don't micromanage them. They have a lot of freedom. They have a lot of flexibility. They're compensated very well. I take care of them with like incentives, with gift cards, all types of things. And I really try to make sure that they feel valued because that's something that I never had. as an employee. So it's important to me now as in this position.
Totally. And so I think too, listeners, if you're listening to this and you've been thinking, oh, I'll never hire, right? I just want to be a solo provider. Hiring isn't for me. Realize that at some point, I can tell you so many private practitioners go into that thinking, go into private practice thinking that, and then all of a sudden they get into it. And just like you said, they have a wait list. They realize that they're leaving money on the table. They realize that they could hire someone and pay them well and be a good boss and give somebody a great job that they love. And that's a major reason to start to hire, right? And especially like Sam, you were saying, just you're starting to feel burnout. Y'all, there's only so many hours in the day. And there's only so much that you can do like by yourself without starting to hire some help, especially when your private practice is in growth mode, right?
Yeah. Especially some of the behind the scenes stuff too, like the website, that was like the first thing that I ever paid for. I was like everyone else, I'm trying to save money at this first startup. And I was like, well, if it's something that I can do myself, I will. It's not that hard to make a website. But then the practice was growing. And I was like, you know what? This is just one of those things that I don't like doing and I don't want to do. And this is worth it for me to pay someone else to do it. So that was like the first thing that I outsourced for. And then I think after that was like an accountant and just slowly taking like things off of my plate too. Cause I don't know. I was like, you know what? Like you guys like doing this and you're good at it. So do it. And I'll do the things that I'm good at.
Yes, I love that. And that's what we should do. That's what people should do as business owners, right? Is as the business, in the beginning, you start off wearing all the hats. That's kind of just how it works, right? But as time goes on, you start to realize that certain hats don't look good on you or don't fit very well, right?
It's true.
They're perfect for somebody else to do, right? So, so I love that. Now, my next question is about where are clients finding you? And what are you kind of doing to attract the clients that you're attracting to your clinic?
Mostly it's like organic referrals, Facebook. There's like mom or parents, I should say, like parenting, like Facebook networking groups in our area. We work with a lot of homeschool co-ops because it's private. So in those type of groups, I have a lot of referral connections in the area. Speech therapist. There's like a child psychologist that has referred to us a few times, different things. But I am very, like I said before, I'm very selective with networking. And I don't like the marketing. I don't like the sales type of things. I'd rather just sit down and have a conversation and learn about your practice. I'll tell you about mine and then see if it's something that sounds good. So a lot of networking, word of mouth. The homeschool like communities are kind of close here. So if somebody has a good experience, they'll tell their friends. The other thing that has been really huge for us is going into private schools. There's such a shortage of OTs here. And I had a client once that I was seeing at a private preschool, and I was on campus and their developmental specialist, I think is her title. She was like, hey, I have 3 other kids that need OT. Do you have any cards? And I was like, well, yeah, but I wasn't here for that reason. I was literally here to see my client. I wasn't like planning on passing out cards or anything, but she sent me like 3 other referrals just for being available, like not doing anything special. So you just kind of have to show up and then do a good job.
Yeah, totally.
It's easier said than done. I know, but like somebody sees you and they're like, oh, I have more kids that could really benefit from what she's working on or what she's offering. So here you go.
Yeah. Well, and like having openings is a big deal, right? We know that there are so many clients who are going without services and stuck on wait lists that I hate to say it, but it's kind of true. Y'all, if you're listening and you have a practice and you don't have a wait list, tell people that, right? Say, oh, yes, I'm an occupational therapist. I have a private practice and I don't have a wait list, right? And like that one factor alone can help more clients find you because every other practice probably does have a wait list, right?
Yep.
And you said this was a developmental specialist. So does that mean that they did EI, I'm assuming?
I think she's just like the developmental person of the preschool. Like she does a lot of like screenings and to see fine motor skills and language and stuff like that.
Perfect. Yeah. But either way, so in, I live in Massachusetts and our developmental specialists, I think, are kind of like part of EI, but it's an entire title actually. But nonetheless, my wife does EI, which is why I hear her talk about these people. Those people are like a pocket of folks who also know your ideal clients, right? So you're an OT, they're a developmental specialist. They also have clients who could use OT, right? So as you're like networking, always zoom out and think, who else knows my clients, right? Because people tend to think like a little bit more like narrow, right? They think about pediatricians or they think about what preschools or whatever. I love that you're networking also with other therapists and other types of providers who also, there's tremendous overlap in the kind of clients that we serve.
Yeah. And also like Phoenix is, it's just so big. So I like meeting other OTs that work in different areas because I'm like, I don't even see it as competition. I think back in the day, I might have been like, well, I don't need to meet with another OT. Like I'll meet with a speech therapist, I'll meet with a physical therapist or whoever, but I don't need to meet with other OTs. But like now I do all the time because they do different things. Like I met with an OT who specializes in feeding. I don't do feeding. If I get a client that needs feeding, I don't see it as competition. I'm like, let me send you to somebody who I know who does this. Or like a different part of the valley. Like I have clients, like we'll get phone calls sometimes and they live like 45 minutes outside of our area. And I'm like, it's just too far, but I can send you to this person who I know that works in that area too. So I think just my advice to be like, don't limit yourself to that, or don't think of the, what do they call it? Like the scarcity mindset. Think of like abundance for sure.
Totally. There's plenty of clients to go around.
I love
what you said, Sam, about just making those one-on-one connections. Because I think a lot of people hear networking and it sounds so scary, right? It seems like a room, and, you know, it feels schmoozy. And there's going to be like other kinds of lawyers and dentists and I don't know, all kinds of like people that like won't understand what we do, right? But like just call people up, or go get coffee with people. And like you said, learn about their practice and they'll learn about yours. And you'll figure out how you can work together because all of us care the most about the clients, right? We want the clients to get services from the people that it makes the most sense to get the services from.
I was going to say we get some too, like siblings. So we get a lot of siblings. We'll maybe start seeing somebody in the family, and then the parent will say, hey, my other son has this going on. Great. So then we end up like seeing multiple kids in the same house. So just being available and being a human and not like a salesperson. Like there's times where I'll be in a house and I'll see the sibling and I'm like, they really could benefit from this, but I'm not here to treat this child. I'm here to treat this child. So I'm not going to say anything. It's not my place to come in and diagnose your entire family. But then they end up reaching out to me and I'm like, yeah, I see that too. We could help you. But I try not to be the one that, I guess, suggest services. Like I let them come to me, even if I'm already like kind of spotting something myself.
Yeah, I love that. I love everything about what you're saying. And I think I'm just, again, so impressed, excited. I was going to say excited, impressed with what you've been able to accomplish and like what you have coming up next, right? Can you share with our listeners, what are your plans for the next, let's say, 6 to 12 months with your practice?
Kind of going day by day. Right now we have the full contract, so that's new. We are just getting started. We are literally like, we just got the purchase order last week, so we haven't even started. So that's been my biggest project, is like, how are we going to make this work? I'm partnering with my speech therapist from here, and her SLPA are actually going to be like providing the services through the school. So we're, I guess, it's like a subcontracting situation. That's my number one project right now. I can't even give you a plan. I feel like such a bad business owner. Like I know everyone has their like quarterly plans and stuff, and I'm just like, I don't know, whatever.
But there's so many different ways you can do this, right? And some people are like more type A and they have all their plans. And other people, so let me ask you in a different way, and maybe you haven't thought about this yet, but what would you say is maybe your intention for next year, right? At the time that we're recording this toward the end of 2023. What do you think your intention might be for 2024?
I definitely want to hire another OT. Like we have quotas, but it would be great to have someone else that can do evaluations. So yes, if anyone's listening to this, wants to work with me in Phoenix, let me know. that's probably a big thing for us. I would love to get another school contract. That'd be a nice win. Personally, I want to take more time off in the summer. That's my personal goal. I want to be off for all of July is what I'm saving for and manifesting at the moment.
Yeah. Listen, that sounds fantastic. Be able to hire more help, right? And to be able to have another contract and take some time off. I think that is fantastic. So if anyone has been listening to this episode and either they're an OT who wants to work for you or they're just in, they're another OT who is inspired by what you're doing, where can people find you online?
My business Instagram would be the best place. So it's at Play and Purpose AZ. And then all of our contact information is on there too. My email, phone number.
Thank you so much for doing this interview, Samantha.
Yes, of course.
I like to show lots of different kinds of practices, lots of different kinds of people, lots of different ways to do this whole thing. And so if you take anything from Samantha's story, be thinking like what resonated with you for what she said, right? And how can you take what she's been able to accomplish and use it for yourself moving forward? So again, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for being so open with all of your lessons learned. And I hope that you have an amazing next 2024.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Don't you just love Samantha? I love how she focuses on neurodiversity affirming approaches and how she created a private practice that allows her to provide the quality care that her clients deserve. Samantha is no nonsense, and I also love that about her. And she's the perfect example of someone who was hesitant to hire, but took the steps that she knew that she needed in order to avoid burnout as her practice grows. If you would like to learn more about our programs and how we support SLPs and OTs just like you when it comes to starting and growing your private practice, please visit privatepracticeschool.com. As always, thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another episode of the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. Till then.
Well, this episode might be over, but we don't have to say goodbye. Head on over to independentclinician.com for resources that will help you at each stage of your private practice journey. If you're on Instagram, let's connect. Follow me and send me a DM. I'm at Independent Clinician. And if you're on Facebook, make sure that you join the SLP and OT Private Practice Beginners Facebook group. All right, off to help more regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners. Let me know if I can help you too.